Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. This is Jason Fitzgerald, and you can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC. It's October 16th, 2020, and we are into week six of the NFL season. Pretty amazing that we're ready the sixth week. It is by far just the fastest sport that there is. It's like a blink of an eye. You go from the opening game of the season into almost the midway point where we're talking about trades and all kinds of different things. And, you know, this season has obviously been packed with news, whether it was extensions on the eve of the season. We've got injuries, you know, horrible injury this week to Dak Prescott. We'll talk about that for just a couple minutes in a little bit. All the coronavirus stuff that's going on, causing cancellations and moving of schedules and stuff related to that. And in-season firings. I mean, we've already seen quarterbacks benched. You know, that's essentially a firing. You know, young quarterbacks benched. We've seen head coaches fired, general managers fired. You know, we had the Texans the other week. This week we had the Falcons. They finally, you know, kind of brought the hammer down. And I guess we'll start with Atlanta. I was going to start with, you know, my Jets, who amazingly ended up in the news again. But we'll get to them in a minute. But I guess we start with Atlanta. So Atlanta, after yet another bad start to the season, they finally go in there and they clean house. They fire the general manager. They fire the head coach. And it's the same thing that I'll say about Houston. If you are firing somebody 4, 5, 6 weeks into a season, what did you bring them back in the first place for? And that's really the big question that I think any fan should be asking of the Atlanta Falcons. You know, how do you let them go in there and make the decisions that you're going to make in free agency? How do you let them select the draft picks that, you know, are going to be the base of your franchise possibly for the next couple of years? And I know they didn't have a big free agency period this year. You know, their big move, they had cap constraints. Pretty much their big move was Dante Fowler is really the guy that they signed. And, you know, they drafted a cornerback in the first round. And I think they took a defensive end, I think a pass rusher in the second round. You know, so it's not the same as getting a quarterback or being in that position to do that. But still, you know, you're in a position where you really have to decide what you're going to do with this franchise. And the way the Atlanta salary cap situation was last year and the way that it is moving forward, if they were going to make this kind of move, they really should have done this last year just to let somebody come in and kind of run the franchise the way that they want to do it. You know, don't let decisions be made even at the end of last year. You know, when it comes to restructuring the Matt Ryan contract, I understand why they did it when they did. You know, and if they're secure in their jobs, that was the right move. You know, probably doing that stuff, that was the right way to handle it. But the question is, why were they secure in their jobs? About midway through the year last year, maybe around Halloween, I'm going to say, might have been a little bit before that, there were rumblings that the head coach was going to get fired. You know, they started out again really bad, and then they started to win a couple games. Next thing you know, they finished the year 7-9, and they didn't get rid of him when they should have done it. And really, as they tumbled down, that should have gone to the general manager as well. And they should have let somebody, I think, come in and kind of shape this kind of more in the mode of what they might want for the future, because it's going to be difficult now for Atlanta as they move forward. You know, last week somebody did ask me a good question, and just kind of try to answer it on the fly, and maybe would answer it a little different, giving it a little more thought. You know, how attractive are the different jobs that are going to exist? And the Atlanta one is just kind of an interesting job that's out there, because it could be really good or it could be absolutely awful, because you're kind of in this really strange position as a franchise right now where you have really nothing that you can do to really turn the page on this group. You know, you're kind of locked into them. It's no different than the Eagles or the Saints or a couple other teams. The difference being you haven't had any success the last couple of years. So I had gotten an email about this earlier in the week from one of the listeners, just about talking about the Falcons in general, and he touched on a couple of things in there, and I'll try and touch on a little bit with that. And I think the main thing was really looking at the general manager, the way that they've done certain things there. And Mitrov's had a he's had a very nice run, obviously there. He got the job, I think it was 2008. And, they had a real successful period there in the time that he took over. It coincided with Matt Ryan, becoming a member of the team. Before that, you went through this period where you kind of hit rock bottom, right? So you had the Michael Vick experience, and things kind of went sideways, I think, with Vick and Morris coach. And then obviously things go off a cliff with Vick. Vic goes to jail, and kind of all hell breaks loose with the franchise. You have the Petrino disaster. I don't even remember who the quarterback was that year. Is that the Joey Harrington year, maybe? I don't know, but whatever it is, it leads to Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, the third pick in the NFL draft that year, and Matt Ryan really changes the franchise around. And they did a nice job, I thought, in kind of building this team around him while he was on a rookie contract. Now, very different rookie contract in that system than there is the rookie contracts we talk about now. But they did a nice job. When I watched this, and I remembered watching Matt Ryan and Flacco that year when they came in, and I thought that both of those teams did such a tremendous job of kind of building these little teams around them and kind of creating these safe haven environments for the quarterback. I thought it was the perfect way of developing a young quarterback without having that kind of thrown to the wolves, shatter the confidence, destroy the confidence with the teammates kind of philosophy. Now, so many years later, 12 years later, maybe I have a different opinion with the way the game has evolved and the game has changed. But I think for then, I think that was the right way to handle it. And you saw what they did with the running back then, the guy from San Diego, back up to Tomlinson. I can't think of the name. And they had Roddy White that was there during that period of time. And, it made this nice little group. And you had some decent players on both sides of the football. And you kind of ran when he was a rookie. Almost feel like a little bit of a ball control style offense to kind of hide him, do the things to get into third and manageable and work through that. And then, as time progressed, he got more and more responsibilities. And 2 years into his career, I mean, he was off flying. And he really took off then, and they did a good job, building the team. So you had Roddy White kind of at a peak, and then you make one of the riskiest trades in NFL history, really, where they bring in Julio Jones. And they move a bunch of assets to get him. And, did the trade work out for them? Yeah, sure. That trade absolutely worked out. Julio Jones, a terrific player. I mean, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Just a great receiver year after year. He's basically 1,500 yards, during the prime of his career. He's 1,500 yards every season. When you go and you evaluate that process, I don't know. It's kind of a weird one. It's like it pays off, but you say to yourself, is this a sign that maybe there's a little too much risk taking here? And maybe that's one of the things that was an issue here, that maybe they did take too many risks here and there. I'm not sure if I would go there or not, but that was a real risky trade, and it paid off for him. And they built a little bit through the draft, and they were able to kind of get back to that level after you had these couple of years in a row where they start to go down again. And where you talk about those are the years that kind of coincided with the Matt Ryan contract extension. That was just kind of coincidental. They had 1 year where the receivers got hurt. They try to rely too much on like a Steven Jackson offense. That wasn't going to work. And then they kind of came back in, I guess it was Quinn's second year. Usually you would expect them to really hit it that first year, but he did it the second year. They go to the Super Bowl. It was not a great football team. It was a good football team, you know, very high-powered offense, terrible defense. You know, but they, you know, they made it to the Super Bowl, and they lost. It was one of the biggest collapses, obviously, in NFL history. And that really spelled doom for the franchise, I think. They chased that. Really, they've chased it for the last four seasons. And in the meantime, you know, all the things that they've done here and there when it comes to the draft, when it comes to free agency, when it comes to contract decisions, really hasn't worked out for them. I think that's kind of the bottom line. You know, when you do take them on a individual basis, when you look at some of the moves, let's not focus on the draft, but let's look at the contract side of stuff. When you look at the contracts and you look at some of the decisions they make, if you take each one as an individual deal, I don't think you can really take issue with too many of the contracts, right? You know, you say to yourself, okay, let me just pull up the Patriots, the Falcons deals here. Let me just take a quick look. Just give me 1 second to pull them all. Sort of by annual value. And when you look, you know, could you question the Jones second extension at 22? Yeah, you can, but, you know, they were just trying to avoid an issue. Jarrett at 17 is in line with the market. Fowler at 15 is a good deal. Matthews at 14.5 is perfectly fine. Deion Jones at 14, a little iffy, but, you know, you take it. Mack at 9 is perfectly fine. You've got your safety at 6.5, Gurley at 5.5, and that's neither here nor there, but, you know, Carpenter at 5, a little bit, whatever. But you notice I'm not getting into a bunch of gigantic deals or anything here. And historically, you know, there have been a couple bigger deals, but nothing that blows you away, I don't think, off the charts. But when you take them as a collective and you kind of see the stuff that they invest in, and one of the things that I would say as you go through these, it's like if things aren't working, you have to make a change. You know, you don't double down. Like, okay, things are working, all right? And so you say to yourself, okay, well, you know what? We got to do this and we have to do that one. And, you know, 2019 for them was a big year. And, you know, they went 7-9 the year before. And that's the season where they do the big contract extension for Grady Jarrett. They do the big contract extension for Julio Jones. And then they go in and they do the Deion Jones one. And I think that's really where you start to get into it. It's like, okay, you know what? Your defense isn't any good. Your defense is pretty bad. What are you doing extending your linebacker? You know, if you want to keep Jarrett, I get it. You know, it's a position where, you know, it's a question mark whether it's really impactful, not impactful, whatever. Your linebacker is the one where you have to say to yourself, well, you know, do we really need to do that with a linebacker? You know, same thing where you get into the Vic Beasley where you've picked up that option here. What are you doing chasing Vic Beasley at a $10 million number for the year or whatever his number was? You know, why are you doing that? You know, why are you doing the deal that you did with Devonta Freeman? That was probably 2017 when they did that. You know, and there you get into the whole the running back thing. And that probably goes a little bit to, you know, I would say one of the other issues is this focus on the team's offense when that really has never been the problem. Maybe it's the problem now, or the defense is still the biggest problem there. But maybe their offense is becoming a little bit more of a problem now. But you look at some of these moves they've made, and maybe it's because it's cheap, so it fits in. You know, historically, you go back to the 2008 one. And so now I'm actually pulling up the names here so I remember it. So so the guy I was thinking about before that I mentioned was Michael Turner. You know, he had a great run with them. But, you know, you made the move for Michael Turner. Then from there you go to Steven Jackson. Now you've got the Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman mix. And you extend Freeman at 80 a year, which at the time was pretty much the highest paid running back in the NFL. Is there ever a time you thought Devonta Freeman was the best running back in the NFL? I didn't. I didn't think that that one necessarily made a lot of sense. And when Freeman falls apart and he's always hurt and everything else, after he signs that extension, what's your next move? Well, you bring in Todd Gurley, and Gurley's been fine. Did you need Todd Gurley? Really? Did you really need Todd Gurley this year? Did you need to waste $5.5 million on Todd Gurley? I think the answer on that is a clear no, but that's kind of the pattern that you see from the team. You know, when you get into the draft picks, they've had a couple guys who have been, Ridley looks like a star. He looks like he's going to supplant Jones, as the number one on this team. But I think as you go back, your problems really run from before that. And that's a lot of times that's where you look. You traded away your assets in the Jones trade. You moved some assets there. So you basically got nothing out of your 2012 draft. And again, you're going to say, well, we were, in the Super Bowl, in 2016. And you just kind of have to go back because it's where these things go that really determines how you're going to do in the future. So you had the Trufant and Alford draft in 2013. That was fine. You got Matthews in 2014, but, nothing of note in your second and third rounds there. Then you had the Vic Beasley, Jalen Collins, draft in 2015. And when you see what you got in the depth category here of 2014, sorry about that. We just had a visit from the 5-year-old here. Let's see where I was at here, and then you move into, your 2016 draft is pretty decent. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think when you look at those years from 2012 to 2015, it kind of lays the groundwork that you're going to have a little bit of a tough time, moving forward. And, your 2016 draft, 2017 was really nothing. 2018, you've got Ridley in there, who's terrific. And, you're seeing how some of these other guys go. Your tackle's pretty good. And then you kind of move from there. But I don't think it's surprising to see where they ended up just based on that and where you get into the contract stuff. And I think some of the contract things, I'm not going to say that they've done bad deals because, like I said, the deals themselves taken, one by one by one aren't bad. But when you look at them as, kind of a group, when you look at them as a roster construction, you look at a team that has kind of been, struggling with the salary cap the last couple of years. And I really liken them very much to New Orleans. I think that their decision making has paralleled the Saints a lot. Their offense is explosive like the Saints. The defense kind of stunk like the Saints. They went through those same kind of ebbs and flows as the Saints, where you had these highs and then you had these lows. Then you had these highs and then you kind of had a little bit of a low period again. And I think there's just been a lot that's there. There's so much focus on the offense. There's a point where it becomes too much. And sometimes it's not focusing on the right things. Even going back to the extension for Roddy White or something like that, those are the times where if you're going to focus on your offense, focus maybe on getting your offensive line a little better. But if you're not going to do that, you've got to work on getting a defense that's at least capable of stopping somebody. So I think those are kind of the things that have really hurt them. Now, where you look at them, a lot of people now are saying, they just need to blow it up. They need to blow it up and start over. Trade Matt Ryan, get a bunch of draft picks for him and go on. And I can see why that thought is tempting, especially because right now, this is the first time I think in Matt Ryan's career where you kind of have that, that thought of, is he done? Is he moving into that stage where he's kind of done? Or does he still have something in him? He's 35 years old, and I know we get blind by Breeze and we get blind by Brady and maybe to a lesser extent Peyton Manning and, you know, Brett Favre from kind of a while ago and a couple of other players. But in general, where you talk about ages for certain players, I've always had it for quarterbacks that this is kind of the age. You know, that 35-year-old is kind of the time where your body, I think, starts to kind of give on you a little bit. You lose that arm a little bit. And these guys throw a lot more now. Maybe things are going to change. You know, they're in better shape too. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, does he really have 4 years left, or is this the start of what's going to be a downside? Is this the start of, you know, the downfall of Matt Ryan, where he's going to be a name and that name is going to carry something, but the on-field play isn't going to match that anymore? And I think this is the first year where you're starting to see it. And it may just be a 6-game blip. It may be a 5-game blip. It may just be that they're, you know, sick of the head coach. You know, maybe not sick of him, but the message wasn't getting through. But they've pushed so much money into Ryan's contract with the restructures and everything else. A trade is not really viable at all. So if you trade him next year, the salary cap hit to trade him would be $44.4 million, right? His cap number is 40.9, which is also crazy. But, you know, someone will look at that and go, well, the numbers are kind of equal, so, you know, just trade him. Well, the problem with that is that the Atlanta Falcons salary cap situation is a mess. So you look at where they are next year. Let me pull up their cap space just so I get the number correct on that. Let me just make sure I have the right thing. Let's give it a second to load. The one computer down here is real slow for whatever reason. And let's see. Okay, here we go. Atlanta. All right, so Atlanta next year, this includes carryover and all that other stuff. Once they get their future signings in there, they will be at $37.5 million over the salary cap. So it's the third worst salary cap situation in the NFL. And part of the way to get out of this, now that this is, again, assuming that we have a 176 cap next year, you know, if the miracle that Atlanta needs is a $200 million cap, if that happens, then yeah, you can finagle a trade with Matt Ryan, even at those numbers. But if you were to trade Matt Ryan and not be able to use the levers in those kind of deals in that contract to be able to, restructure the contract, you know, push more money to the future and all that other stuff. If you're not able to do that, you put yourself in a really hard position now to be able to create what would have to be about $40 million in cap room. So let's put him down as a trade. And, you know, you're basically about $40 million over. So what are you going to do then? What's next? So Dante Fowler, he's going to have to go. You're going to have to find somebody to trade for Dante Fowler. So let's do that. You're $31 million over the cap. You can't cut him. So just, you got to find a trade partner. You don't get anything out of Deion Jones. So, you know, you're not going to be able to cut there. Let's cut Ricardo Allen. Let's do that. All right, we're $25 million. Cut James Carpenter. About $21 million or so. Alan Bailey, let's get rid of him too. We're at about $16 million over. We're going to restructure Jake Matthews, right? He's still going to be good for a while. Do that. We'll just do basic restructure there. Now we're about $11 million over. Okay, where else do I have savings here? I don't. Wow, look at that. I don't really have any savings. So I'm 11 over, a little bit less than that. Probably about 9 over. I don't have in the calculator, I don't have the effective values in there. So basically now what's next? What am I going to do with Grady Jarrett? Am I going to restructure that deal and push money to the future? I don't think so. I'm not going to cut him. I owe him 4 or 5 if I cut him. So I'm going to see if I can find a trade partner. So let's trade him. Okay, now I'm about at the cap. I'm a little bit under the cap at this point with that move by trading Grady Jarrett. I still don't have money to sign my draft picks. I've gutted the roster. Now what's next? Well, Julio Jones. Okay. Can I find a trade partner for Julio? I will lose cap space if I do that. That doesn't sound too promising. All right. What if I cut him? Well, no, then I lose a lot of cap space. So I got to restructure him. Now, his contract may have an automatic restructure clause in there. You know, it's possible. But is he going to want to restructure his deal and say, I'm going to be here without Matt Ryan and I'm going to be here with a rookie? I don't know. I'm not sure if he will or won't. But if you're gutting your roster, do you really want to be doubling down on Julio Jones? I wouldn't think so. You know, it's just not a good setup for doing anything to be able to move forward. You're moving forward is you need to move forward with this roster. And I think that's a failure of the general manager in the way that he's planned this out, that there was no escape hatch. This was a team that was going in the wrong direction with no escape hatch. And I'm sure most Falcons fans probably picked on the Saints during that period where they went 7-9, 7-9, 7-9. And like I said, the parallels are there because they did the same thing. There was no escape hatch. They built themselves into a roster that you couldn't get out of. The difference is the Saints hit a big draft and then a second big draft in a row. And they hit it at a couple positions that were pretty important. And the Falcons didn't do that. The Falcons have hit a couple of guys here and there, you know, no doubt about it. But they didn't really get those draft classes that make up for the fact that you haven't been able to get guys in free agency or whatever, you know, however you want to look at that. So they're really stuck. So when you come in here and you take this job, I don't think this is a job that you're rebuilding in 21. You're retooling, restructuring in 22 is really the way that this is going to go. Now, even if you push money on Matt Ryan, which I think you have to do for cap considerations, I think you can still trade him in the future. You know, right now is dead money in 22, I think is 26. Let's see, 26 million. And, you know, it would get higher, but you can deal, I think, with that. As long as the cap gets back to something normal at that point. So I think really the right path now for Atlanta is you need to get a general manager that has no emotional attachment whatsoever to any of these guys on the team. You know, the Matt Ryan, Julio, just none of it. And you need him to come in and say, you know what, I'm going to work with these guys next year, but we have to have a plan in place that in 2022 lets us move away from this group and rebuild a whole new structure, a whole new team, you know, and move in a completely different direction. And even if you get that great year out of these guys, you still got to have it in the back of your mind that we need to see if we can move them at that point for assets. You know, will Matt Ryan's trade value be higher? Probably not. But I just don't see how you can move him. I think the right move for them now, you bring in someone like that. I don't think the same. I think the Falcons are too good to finish, you know, 3-13. I think there's still too much talent on the team. Probably going to win 5 or 6 games. And that probably takes him out of the running for a top quarterback. But, you know, I never know with the college stuff. But if they have an opportunity to draft a quarterback, I think they have to draft a quarterback with the thought process that he's going to sit for a year and everything is geared to 22. Everything is geared to 22 and 23. 21 is you're dealing with the contracts on the team, you're dealing with the players on those contracts, and you're just going to let the chips fall where they may. You try and get something out of the group, but it has to be known you're kind of moving forward from this group no matter what once you get to 2022. And I think that's the way that they're going to have to play this. And I think it's going to be a long process for them. But if they have an opportunity to draft a quarterback this year, they have to do it. I think it'd be a big mistake for them not to do it. They're not going to get another option. And Matt Ryan, I would not have the confidence, no matter what, in any quarterback that it was. And I would have said the same thing about Brady, 4, 5, 6 years ago. It's time to get an escape plan in place. So it's kind of my thoughts on the Falcons. This all just came a year too late. I think if they had done this before, they would have had a better start with a different coach. I think with the general manager, they may have had a different approach to building the team. And I think they would have kind of maybe gotten out of this rut that they're in. And instead of going backwards, I think maybe they could have started that process of moving forward. And instead, they're kind of lost right now. So we'll see. Dak Prescott got hurt. Not much to say about it. It was a nasty looking injury. I think he'll be back pretty much fine from it. I know a lot of people were concerned about the contract stuff there. I don't see how any of this changes his contract situation at all. He was having a great year. Yeah, it's a couple of games, but I'd be more worried if this was, if you had something that was like a hip injury, if you had something that was maybe even Achilles, if you had something that was his shoulder ripped apart, stuff like that, I think he'd be more worried about it. Obviously, the compound fracture is not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. And you wonder if that's going to hurt his mobility a little bit, which is part of his game and everything else. But, they were going to be in a position where they were probably going to be in a stalemate next offseason anyway. He was probably going to get tagged a second time no matter what. So he's probably still going to get tagged a second time. The one difference here, the one spot where he loses out is because the division was so bad, Dallas was probably going to be in a position to run away with the playoffs, which is hard to believe for a team that, one or two wins. But they were going to have a chance to get there. And that offense is so high powered. If they could have made a run in the playoffs and somehow snuck in, even if they were 8-8, to a Super Bowl or something like that, Dallas would have been in a position where they probably had to do the big extension for Prescott. Now that's all going to be delayed, I think, by a year. But if that wasn't going to happen anyway, it was probably going to play out the same way. So I don't think this is the kind of situation. This isn't Drew Brees getting hurt where, they have someone waiting in the wings. So they let him go to free agency and people are concerned about it because it was a late season injury. Look, if you're going to get hurt, it's better that you got hurt in week 5 than you get hurt in week 17. All right. You'll be back healthy pretty much for the offseason. This is not Teddy Bridgewater who's tore apart two legs at the same time. It's not that at all. It's very different. So, I wouldn't worry about Dak Prescott's future. It stinks to see happen. A lot of people now are saying, they're not going to lose anything with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's an okay quarterback. He's not as good as Prescott. I don't know where that thought comes from. I don't think people realize how good those Bengals teams were that he played on when he had that successful run. People now look back on that, I think, kind of fondly, and they look back at it as saying, yeah, you see how good he was. Those teams always underperform when it came to the playoffs, but they were loaded with talent. They were loaded with talent on defense. They had some terrific players on offense. He was part of it. He got hurt a lot, at inopportune times, it would seem like. The coaching staff was not good enough to get over the hump. That was a team that probably needed a change just to see if they could get over the hump. But Andy Dalton was completely incapable of carrying that team once the talent level went down. As the players got older and the talent level went down, Andy Dalton was completely incapable of doing that. Now, Dallas, I think, has a high talent level. I do think a question to me is he going to be able to score the kind of points that Prescott was putting up, because Dallas's defense is atrocious. So I don't know if he'll be capable of that. But I do think he's probably the best quarterback right now in that division, which really says more about how bad Daniel Jones is and how bad whatever the Washington football team putting out there is and how bad Carson Wentz is playing right now than it is an endorsement of Andy Dalton. But I think Andy Dalton being in there completely destroys the Cowboys' chances of probably moving beyond that wild card round. You know, but it's a blow for Dak. It's obviously a big blow for the Cowboys. But I think Dak will come out of this perfectly fine. And I think we'll just be having the same conversations we were going to have anyway when it comes to the contract stuff, except people will talk more about the injury when in reality probably doesn't change too much in the decision-making process for next year. We've got the Jets. I didn't think we'd be talking much about the Jets anymore other than a couple of my whinings about how bad they are. The Jets cut Le'Veon Bell this week. So Le'Veon Bell, who was on injured reserve after the first game, with a hamstring pull or something like that, I don't know. He basically went out after the game, didn't like the way he was used, you know, basically was splitting time with Frank Gore. Jets turned around and they said they did an extensive search or something like that for trading. How you could do that in 24 hours, I don't know. They've determined there were no takers, so they cut him. Signs with the Kansas City Chiefs, big upgrade for him to go there. I don't get the Jets. I just don't. They've done so much damage. It's like, could you do more damage to your reputation than you already did? And somehow they've done it. They've created this environment now where players are talking themselves off the team. Now, Bell was going to get cut next year anyway, but you know, you look back at the problems they've had. You've got this one. You've got the guard from last year, who had a fight with the Jets over an injury. He filed a grievance for his salary when they didn't pay him. Quincy Enunwa, who was hurt and got fined, and he got cut this year, even though they had to pay him a bunch of money. You had Brian Winters that was cut. The way they dragged that on, really for no good reason. You had the Jamal Adams situation. You know, it's not a good look for the franchise overall. And you can say, well, we want guys who want to be here. Well, guys don't want to be here because of the head coach. They don't want to be here because the team stinks. They just don't want to be here for so many different reasons. And you've got to change that. But letting guys talk their way out of the team, I just don't get that at all. You know, people say, well, they couldn't trade the contract because there were injury guarantees next year. Okay. You restructure it, you redo it, you rework the deal. People are like, well, that doesn't happen. That happens all the time in the NFL. If a guy wants off a team, trust me, they will give it up because what's his other option? He goes into free agency right now, middle of a season, and what's he going to earn? $1 million? I mean, I don't know what the Chiefs ended up paying him. I don't know. Most of it should be guaranteed by the Jets, so most of it should get offset, so I would think the minimum. There's been some conflicting thoughts on that in regards to termination pay. I read it differently than others do, but you know, I'm not sure. Basically, the way termination pay works is it should be, you know, your entire salary, your entire paragraph five salary is protected, which in his case, I think it's like $8.5 million or something like that. And they determine your termination pay charge based on how much money you are owed by the team minus the amount that's guaranteed. So his whole salary was guaranteed. So the guarantee should supersede the termination pay. The question comes from, I guess, the offset clause. So the Jets have an offset in there. So I guess the question is, excuse me, if the Chiefs technically pay him, let's say, $1 million, and then that means the Jets only paid him $5 million of the remaining six that they owe him, can he file a claim for $1 million in termination pay from the Jets? Because he was paid that by the Chiefs. I don't know if that's the case. You know, they use the word in the CBA earned. A lot of times the way that these contracts are written on the offset is a reimburse. So I would technically think he earns the guarantee through the Jets, which gets around the termination pay aspect of it if he signs with another team. And then he has to reimburse the Jets. That should be outside of that. In any event, the Jets, no matter, they're still going to pay him probably $6 billion, $5 million, $6 million, whatever it is. In the grand scheme of things, not a big deal. It's more just a technicality kind of thing. But you absolutely could have come up with a way to trade him by getting him to waive that other year. Look, if you had gotten a trade on the table from Kansas City, and I'm not saying Kansas City would have done that, but let's say you got a trade on the table from Kansas City, even if they're going to give you a six-round draft pick for him, a seventh-round draft pick for him, and you ate $5 million of his $6 million salary, and you said, well, listen, you're going to go there anyway, this at least gets you there. Otherwise, we might trade you to someone else. You got to waive that, $8 million. If we cut you, you're going to waive it anyway. So there are ways to do it, because your other option is to say, well, you know what? Then we'll just stick you on the bench. You come, you stay here and we'll sit you on the bench. So I don't know what the Jets are doing. I just don't know how they're doing this, but I have to assume at this point now they should go into complete fire sale mode. Their performance-wise is terrible. If you look at the amount of money they're paying players who are not on the team, it's about 14% of their entire budget, which is crazy. NFL average is around 2. They're at 14 because they're paying guys who aren't here this year. It's just crazy. Yeah, it's on Maccagnan, but some of this goes on Joe Douglas as well. Look, he's been in charge of this environment, which has guys saying, whatever you do, don't come to New York. He's part of the environment. He's part of this enabling culture that's here right now. He's part of it. You can't say it's all Adam Gase. When that decision is made to where you've got this left tackle who's a great prospect, he's hurt, and you say, well, we're going to dress him for the game. Okay, why are you going to dress him? Well, maybe we're dressing him to comply with the CBA rule. Okay, that was kind of the theory that was out there. I thought it was a good one. It was Brian Costello, I think, that mentioned that. So I'm sure that was floated out there, and that kind of makes sense. Okay, and somebody gets hurt, and you put him in. As the general manager, you got to tell your head coach, don't put this guy in. He's going to get hurt because he got hurt. It's the same thing that happened with C.J. Mosley last year. You've got this $17 million linebacker who's hurt. He can't move. And you bring him on the field again in week 4 or whatever it was. Why? No, I don't know. Mosley will probably never play a down for the Jets again. Worst free agent class of all time. Le'Veon Bell, $27.5 million from the Jets for, 700 rushing yards, 17 games. CJ Mosley is going to play a game for the Jets. He's going to make $50 million by the time it's all said and done. It's just absolutely crazy how bad they are. But I have to think they go into fire sale mode. And reports are already out the week about, the Jets won't get a first-round pick for Sam Darnold. Okay, that's the Jets floating it out there. Hey, we don't need a first-round pick for Sam Darnold. Well, no, you know what, Sherlock. He stinks. Sam Darnold's no good. He's hurt a lot. There's not much upside that looks like it's there anymore. Might you get a second round pick for him? Yeah, maybe you would. Who would give that? Yeah, maybe the Colts. They're going to be in desperate position for quarterback. The Bears, you're looking at teams who don't have the resources to draft a quarterback is really what you're looking at. And, that Darnold kind of fits the bill for those types of teams. Would the Broncos consider it? Maybe not, but that's the type of team. San Francisco, would they consider just a different option at quarterback that could at least be on the roster? I don't think they'd give you much for him, but, maybe. Then something was floated out there about Quinnen Williams being out there. And so they asked this week, what would you take for him? I said, I think a second round pick that could jump to a first. A lot of people, oh, that's crazy. You got to get at least a first for him. What have you seen from Williams in his year and a half with the Jets right now that would make you think a team is going to give you a future first round pick? Because I haven't. It's not to say he can't develop into it. That's a different story. But what would make you think that another NFL team would think that? Because right now, what Williams is someone who is a capable defender. You know, he plays about 60% of the snaps. You know, that's above average. He's not a great pass rusher, not a great defender. You know, he's okay. You know, I would say he's a kind of an average, maybe if you even want to say slightly above average. But the thing is, if you give up a draft pick for him, let's say you give up the 15th, what it ends up being the 15th pick in the draft. Let's just use that as a number. The type of player he is probably pretty close to what you would just expect blind on that draft pick. Maybe a little bit better, probably not much better in that ballpark. But it doesn't come with the upside, because I don't think that you would look at him and you would say, okay, well, we can see this magical upside that's there. You know, the upside that's there is just based on his draft status. And I think most teams, when it comes to trades, are smart enough to overlook that. When it comes to signing free agents, they aren't. But when it comes to actually having to give up draft capital, a lot of times I think they're smart enough for it. So I think that the best you could get on that is a second. Now, if you want to say you want to keep him, I'll play devil's advocate here. The Jets are going to draft a quarterback next year. If the Jets don't draft a quarterback next year, they're insane. So basically, you look at this. This is Williams' second year in the NFL. And the third year in the NFL is also going to be a waste, because you're going to have a rookie quarterback. You know, by a miracle, might you be able to compete? Yeah, you might be able to, but most likely you're talking about a developmental year. When the quarterback hits year two, you have a chance that the quarterback could take off then. That's going to hit Williams' last year under contract with the Jets. Jets are either going to have to guarantee a fifth year ahead of time before even knowing anything about the rookie quarterback, really. And you have to ask yourself, you know, is he going to be that kind of force, that kind of a terror on the line? Is he going to turn into Sue? Because that's what you have to be. You have to be that Sue-style player, you know, to really justify it. You know, I think there's more value in having players that are going to grow with your quarterback, you know, at the same time. The same reason why I think it made sense to get rid of Jamal Adams. You want to have players who are going to be at their peaks with the quarterback, not players who are either going to be off the team through via free agency, or players who are going to be kind of coming out of their prime and heading downward when your quarterback hits those prime years. Yeah, you need players like that. You need free agents that you're going to bring in and do that. But it's more important probably to build your team. It's kind of the strategy the Miami Dolphins used last year with the way that they kind of did their rebuild. And, you know, while I'm not crazy with the complete punting on a season, the Jets aren't going anywhere. I mean, we know that. They're going to be lucky to win a game. You know, things are that bad. So, you know, they have to do stuff now to really bring up the roster. But I think the goal on this has to be that you just look forward and you can't look backwards. And really, anyone that you've drafted leading up to this, with the exception of the left tackle and maybe the wide receiver, he hasn't suited up yet, so I'm just assuming he probably goes along the line of all the Jets' second-round busts. But I think you have to look at every single player on this roster, and if they have any value, I think you have to move them, because unless you were drafted in 2020, you probably are not going to play a role on this team when the team is any good. It's just a fact. You know, is Jamison Crowder going to be important for a rookie quarterback in 21? Maybe. Is he going to be important for that quarterback in 22? Absolutely not. At least I hope not. You know, you need someone better than that. You know, and that's not to pick on Crowder. Crowder's exceeded my expectations, and he's been one of the better players on the Jets. But you have to look at what you have as an asset right now and say, how do I fix this team? You know, what can I pay somebody to take CJ Mosley next year? You know, can I flip Jamison Crowder for something? Can I flip Sam Darnold for something? Can I flip Quinnen Williams for something? You know, that's what you have to ask yourself. And I think that's what the Jets need to do. But man, there is just nothing on this team. It is just bleak. It is dark, dark, dark days right now for the team. Just an awful effort last week. Let's quickly do picks for this week. We'll just run through them real quick. Last week it was around 500. So let's see. Again, these are early lines from the week. We'll just run through them real quick. So we've got Atlanta is going to Minnesota. Minnesota's a 3.5-point favorite. Atlanta comes in with a new coach. Minnesota, they're a weird team. 3.5 points almost seems like a lot for them to give. So I'm going to take Atlanta here. Just seems like too much for Minnesota, because even if Minnesota wins, and I do think Minnesota will win the game, Minnesota plays these games that are just tight and close. No defense, all offense. It's not even great offense, just some scoring that happens along the way somehow. So I'll take Atlanta. Baltimore goes to Philadelphia. Philadelphia gets 7.5 at home. Take Baltimore. Chicago goes to Carolina. Carolina is a 2.5-point favorite. Carolina has played terrific since McCaffrey went down. I'm not going to say that's sign on McCaffrey. I think it's just a sign that they're opening up their offense a little bit more, and they have other talented parts that, you know, sometimes get overshadowed by the flashier running back. Chicago's got a good defense. I think they'll hold down that offense a little bit, but I'll take Carolina at home. Chicago's got to start losing some of these games, and this makes sense to me to lose. Cincinnati goes to Indianapolis. Indianapolis, 7.5-point favorite. Indianapolis is they're going to be the classic style of team that just has no ability to play from behind, but they're never going to be behind the Bengals, I wouldn't think. I would think they'll eat Burrow alive, cover that spread pretty easy. Great game. Cleveland goes to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a 3.5-point favorite. You're going to learn if Cleveland is a contender or a pretender in this one. Cleveland has found ways to score points despite the fact that their quarterback is kind of eh. Pittsburgh scored a bunch last week. Defense has been kind of up and down a little bit. Their offense looks like it's right back on track. Maybe they found another wide receiver. It's 1 week. I don't know if you do read that much into it. I will take Pittsburgh with the 3.5, but I think that would be kind of a fun story if Cleveland were to somehow win the game. Denver goes to New England. I don't even know if this game is going to take place. Maybe it will. Take New England. It's a lot of points, but with Cam Newton back, I think they should be able to cover that. Detroit goes to Jacksonville. Jacksonville with 3.5, getting 3.5. Lions. Jacksonville's either going to win outright or just get clobbered. I know Detroit always lets you come back into a game, but I'll take the Lions. Houston is at Tennessee. This is a big game for Houston. You know, Tennessee had a huge win against the Bills. They're on a real short week, though. I'm going to take the Texans here. I'm the kiss of death for them all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if Houston wins that outright. In a battle of just awful football, we get the Washington football team, which is an insult to football teams anywhere. Take on the, except the Jets. They take on the Giants. Giants are favored by 3.5. Neither team has any offense. Both teams have a pretty decent defense. Just a question of which team turns the ball over more. I think the Giants will play with a little more energy, a little more urgency. I'll take the Giants to get the first win of the season and cover. Jets go to Miami. Miami's favored by 8.5. Unless you get the complete Ryan Fitzpatrick meltdown, take Miami. Green Bay off their bye goes to Tampa. Tampa gets 1.5. Aaron Rodgers has been terrific. I think you have to go that way. He's doing it with just about anybody and everybody. I know it's a road game, but I think you take the Packers here. Rams go to San Francisco. This could be a knockout blow if the Rams can do this. San Francisco has not been good. I was not high on them at all this year. They look to be even worse than I kind of had thought there. I'll take the Rams. I think the Rams might blow them up. Kansas City at Buffalo. Buffalo is a 3.5-point underdog. It's a short week for Buffalo. I don't know if the Bills got caught looking ahead to this game. I don't really know what the deal was with what happened the other day. Kansas City has not been as dominant this year. I think they've had more struggles at certain spots. The Bills, I kind of thought were the one team that could compete with Kansas City. I thought they had the, well, maybe not the one team, but the team that I thought had the best chance to maybe knock them off. I'm going to go with that. I'm not going to read too much into that game this week. Maybe be different if I see two. I'm going to take Buffalo here with the points. I'm going to take Buffalo to actually pull off the upset and win the game outright. I think that they're a really good team, and I think they just got caught with their pants down last week. Arizona's at Dallas. Dallas, 2.5 points. Arizona's another team that's very up and down. Dallas is, I think, the better team, even with Andy Dalton. But I don't know. Dallas makes so many mistakes on the field. It's just hard to say what's going to happen there. I'll blindly take Dallas. I'm not as confident on that. But I'll take the Cowboys to win the game. So that's it for the picks. So let's take a look at Twitter questions here and see if we got anything. I mentioned it two times today that I'd be doing a podcast, so. All right. We'll go through first time I asked here. Okay. Benin says, have seen talk the Bell's contract had offset language, but also the claimed termination due to being cut, which would mean the Jets would still have to pay him. If it's true, in what circumstance will the offset kick in? So, I mentioned that a little bit before. The way that this would work, if the termination pay thing is true, the way that it would work is this. He gets cut and he gets paid his guarantee, for the remainder of the season, about $6 million that's outstanding. What would happen then is he would, or probably the Chiefs, probably direct out of his paychecks, would reimburse the Jets for basically every week that he's playing with Kansas City. They would reimburse the Jets the money that the Jets owed him. It would either be taken out, paid directly to the Jets. I don't know what the schedule is to pay him. So it would either be that, or he would get paid and then he would have to pay the Jets back at the end of the season. And then what would happen is that offset, let's say it's $1 million, just to use a round number. The NFL would go in and calculate that offset and say, okay, you offset $1 million of that. So $5 million was paid by the Jets. $1 million was not paid by the terminating club. So you could go back and you could file a claim for termination pay for $1 million. So I think that's what it is, but the offset kicks in no matter what. He can't go in there and claim a full termination pay in lieu of the guarantee. He has to, the guarantee supersedes, as far as I know, supersedes the termination pay. Excuse me. It supersedes that. The question just is, does the offset also supersede the termination pay or not? And I don't know the answer to that. New Jet City, how unusual was the $8 million injury guarantee in Bell's third year of his Jets contract, which ultimately made it impossible to trade him? It's not very uncommon. If you're a superstar player, usually your third year has some type of injury guarantee that vests. I don't think that's the reason the Jets were unable to trade him. Like I said, you could have gotten that out of there. We've seen players do that before. Look at Colin Kaepernick. Look at what he did with his contract years ago to get back on the field. He gave up guarantees to get back on the field. It happens. But it's pretty common for that level of player. The dude, 1234, sent you an email regarding the Falcons. Oh, yep. So that's who I got that from. So I guess hopefully I answered most of your questions there. Soundtrack to Chaos. How would you evaluate the job, in quotes, that Joe Douglas has done since being hired by the Jets? Gase seems to be taking the blame for a lot of roster construction, but not addressed by that current GM. Part of why Bell never worked was because of Douglas's line. So I heard a lot of good things about Joe Douglas. I don't know how you could be anything but kind of, you know, incomplete on him. Certainly has not done a good job. I don't know if you can say he's done necessarily a bad job, but it certainly hasn't been good. You know, you get a better feel for it next year. His free agency group this year has not been good. His couple of summer signings last year, the Khalil stuff was not good. He played the Jamal Adams situation in terms of getting trade value incredibly well. The left tackle looks like he's a really good player. Those are some of the hits, I would say. He's let Adam Gase, I think, run the franchise into the ground. You know, the stuff I mentioned before, a lot of that is on Douglas. You know, you are controlling the organization. You have to set the tone for that kind of stuff. And I don't think he's doing that. As for Gase taking the blame, yeah. And, you know, I've said that I think one of the reasons why the Jets are not going to fire Gase until at least much later in the year is simply because of the fact that it hides anyone else from blame. As long as Adam Gase is the head coach, every week, he will take the blame for what goes on the field. And people won't talk about the owners. They won't talk about the general manager. They won't talk about how bad the roster is. They won't talk about the players. Everything will be about Gase. The minute they fire Gase, if they fire Gase too early in the process, what happens is that all the attention then turns to, why didn't this guy do something to get this team better? You know, why does Perryman stink? Why did the center not work out yet? Why are the guards not very good? What was the purpose of George Fant? Why can't we do anything with Sam Darnold? Why do these players want to leave? Why are you getting into a fight with this guy? Why are you getting into a fight with this guy over whatever to where you got to cut players? But it hasn't been good. I just don't know if he's had enough time to where you can say it's bad. That's the fault of the Jets organization. This would be a completely different story if he had run that draft 2 years ago and he had run free agency 2 years ago. Then you would have a completely different story because you would have two off seasons and you would also have all these other things that have gone on with the team that just make them look dysfunctional, and you'd be able to get an idea as to, you know, whether he's good or not. If he had done the same exact draft and free agency as Mike Maccagnan did, I don't think you'd be able to bring Joe Douglas back next year based on what Joe Douglas did this year and Mike Maccagnan did last year. If that had all been done by Douglas, and I'm not saying it would have been, I think you would have enough ammunition to say this is John Idzik part two. Andy says, any idea what the Chiefs contract looks like? No, I don't know. Black Gold, can you go over what Tannenbaum said about offsets? So Mike Tannenbaum, this is getting back to the same thing, talked about that same kind of double dip thing and kind of disagree a little bit on it. But what he was talking about in there is a case that was brought against the NFL, basically, where a couple of players who had earned salaries with other teams, you know, basically what teams were looking to do was to offset termination pay. So if you, let's say you filed a claim for termination pay for, say, $2 million, just throw a number out there, and that player went and signed with another team and earned $700,000, those teams were trying to say, well, they don't owe them, you know, $2 million. You know, they maybe they owe, you know, one point, what did I say that, how much it would be? 600,000 or something, 1.4, you know, whatever that is, or 1.3, if I said 700,000, you know, I think that's that was that suit. And I think the arbitration hearing that came out of that said, no, that's not in the spirit of termination pay. Termination pay is basically a privilege that comes from one team and one team only. And regardless of what happens to you after that, you don't lose your termination pay because you were lucky enough to get a job somewhere else, which makes sense. You know, that makes sense to me. But this is a little bit more complicated, I think, because you have a guaranteed salary in there. Already says name of the podcast, Over the Cap Podcast. There we go. Okay, let's see here. Second set of questions. Okay. Miguel, any cap reason for the NFL's current reluctance to add a week 18 to the 2020 schedule? No, I wouldn't think a salary cap reason. I think here's the deal, probably, at least. I think the NFL, to have a week 18, needs there to be a reasonable slate of games. I don't think they want an open week to where you're just going to have, say, the Broncos and the Patriots. I'll even give you two games. I'll say, let's say you would have had the Broncos, Patriots, and the Bills and the Titans, and that's it. And your playoff implications may have been minimal, may have been non-existent. So you would have had no meaningful games of those four, and you just would have been playing them for no real reason whatsoever. I think if the NFL is going to have a week 18, they want there to be at least, I'm going to say 10 games, because then you know that something in there is going to be meaningful. Even if the rest of the teams have finished their season, you're going to have something meaningful in there. And if you know that you're going to have a slate of something like 8, 9, 10 games, well, you can go to the networks and you can probably negotiate to say, hey, look, you're going to get an extra week of football. What are you going to pay us for it? You know, we're going to get this out to the highest bidders. You know, how is this going to work? But I think that might be part of it. You know, the stuff may be covered under the current NFL contracts, to go there. But that also means there's going to be an expense that's associated with it. But I would think that the main thing is that you want to have a meaningful slate. And I don't think they're at the point where they know that yet. So I think as long as it's like, excuse me, a game here and a game there that gets canceled, I think it just has more to do with the fact that you don't want a week with a game. It just doesn't do any good unless you're talking about playoffs. You know, do you want that? What if that game is the New York Jets versus the Miami Dolphins? The Dolphins are decent. They might even be a playoff team, but something involving the Jets. You know, the Jets versus the 49ers, if that was to happen. Let's say that game was delayed. Would you really want that as your standalone game in week 18? So I think that's what it is. Proud Black Matt. Hi, Jason. When does creating cap space catch up with a team? We've seen some recent examples of teams like the Saints, Vikings, Rams, who seem to have endless space. Does it ever catch up with teams, or has it already? So, you know, with the Saints, it caught up with them before. When they had those years where it was 7-9, 7-9, 7-9, they were in a pinch. They couldn't do stuff. They got out of it, and then they got themselves back into it, but they got out of it really based on draft picks. That was really what happened. The Rams, you know, the Rams, a lot of things that happened with them this year had to do with getting their cap in order for next year. Same thing to a lesser extent, I guess, with the Vikings. There's a point where it hits teams. There's a point where it hits like a breaking point. Pittsburgh is probably at a breaking point next year. Atlanta, that we talked about, is probably at a breaking point. New Orleans. Now, next year's a little bit different because of, you know, how much the things are going to fall. But, it happens every couple of years. Sometimes it's just not as overt. But a lot of times teams have to be, you know, aware of the cap stuff before they jump in on things. Diego, if I pronounce that right, why did Bell sign for more than the minimum salary with the Chiefs? And I have no idea. I don't know the particulars of that. And like I said, I don't know you know, how that really is going to work with this whole termination pay and, you know, everything else. But I don't know much about that, that deal itself, so I can't really comment on it, you know, for that. But, you know, we'll see. I'll touch on that the more I hear about it. And I'll ask around on this rules clarification, but I don't think anyone's going to know because the couple of stuff I've gotten, there's been a lot of different opinions on it. Basti GGG says, are Cam Newton's contract bonus numbers likely to be earned or not likely? They're all not likely to be earned. You know, he only played two games last year. Did the Jets go from the worst drafting GM, Idzik, ever to the worst free agent signing GM, Maccagnan, ever? Ooh, you know, that's a good one. It's hard to come up with someone that's had a worse free agent run than Mike Maccagnan. Maybe there's been somebody, but he's got to be up there. You know, I mean, there were years where the Raiders may have had a worse run. But McCagnan's way up there. And Idzik was terrible. You know, it's 2 years and yeah, he had nobody. So yeah, the Jets really hit it out of the ballpark with that one, with both of those. You know, I've talked about it before. You know, the move away from Tannenbaum with no plan of what to do was just not good for New York. We never recovered from it. Master Variable, the coach of the year so far. That's a good one. Yeah, you've had a couple of guys who've done really well. You know, you've got, you know, Seattle. You know, that's been pretty good there. You know, Carolina, that's been a much better than expected job there. You're going to get consideration in Green Bay. You know, Buffalo. He might get some consideration there, I would think. You know, Belichick's never going to win, but Belichick should probably get some consideration there as well. Baltimore's having a good year. You know, Cleveland, you know, that's something. You know, it's so early in the season. You know, look at Tomlin. You know, Tomlin always gets overlooked from these things. You know, Tennessee's had a really good start. You know, there's a lot of teams right now. I don't think anyone is pulled away yet. So I think it's too early to, you know, to say on that. CeeDee Lamb's stand account is Jalen Smith, one of the worst contracts in the league at this point. I don't know if it's one of the worst in the league. You know, it was just unnecessary, I think is probably the way to put it. You know, I don't know if I would call it one of the worst in the league, but unnecessary. Let's put it that way. JMD, has the inventory at quarterback reached a point where you don't have to overpay to have one anymore? Sit back and let the market come to you since there are a limited number of jobs similar to New England last year. I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I've kind of mentioned that before, that there needs to be teams that can kind of sit back and do that, but no one's been willing to do it. So I don't know. You're going to get a big influx of free agents again, you know, pretty soon, or tradable commodities, I guess. But I don't know. I really don't. You know, even where you look at, you know, all these players making in the low 20s. Now, I guess maybe that's considered a bargain at this point. So maybe that is a reasonable number. But yeah, I mean, I think there's more players that are out there where I think you can kind of start to make a couple moves on them. You know, I think someone just, a trend needs to start somewhere there. And I think last year was probably the start of that when Winston couldn't get a job. So that'll be kind of an interesting thing to see. The People's Champ, Titans 4-0 start. Good start for Tennessee. They killed the Bills. I mean, I did not expect that at all last week. You know, that was men versus boys. I mean, they just beat them up left and right. You know, it was the Derrick Henry end of game, you know, stiff arm on Norman was just, that was like the icing on the cake. I mean, they just destroyed him. You know, that was something. But yeah, they play a lot better than I thought they would. You know, so all right, that is it for me tonight, everyone. So I will be back next week. So everyone enjoy the games this weekend, and I will talk to you again soon.